This is the Tax Update Podcast for July the 7th, 2008. This week, S-Corporations and the AAA account. Tax Update Podcast intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research and firm items praised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast's document may be reproduced freely as long as no fee is charged for the use of the document. Such prohibited use include using this podcast or documents prior to CP presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services located on the web at www.linebergservices.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Visit them on the web at www.linebergservices.com. This week, we're going to take a look at some guidance the IRS issued regarding AAA and S corporations. The guidance isn't really something, I guess, was of earth-shattering significance, but it gives us an opportunity to look at, in general, the whole issue of S corporations and the accumulative adjustment account. And that's probably something that's useful to review at this point. We're going to take a look at the overall importance of AAA, its relationship or lack of relationship to shareholder bases and the shareholder shares, and how we go about computing AAA, including how we work in the guidance that we got this week on life insurance and AAA accounts. Now, the actual definition of the accumulated adjustment account is found in Internal Revenue Code Section 1368, which deals with distributions from an S corporation. That of significance is where AAA is going to become the important component in determining the corporate treatment of the distributions, and whether the shareholder is going to treat them under the distribution rules or under the dividend rules, as we'll discover here in a second. The general rule says a distribution of property made by an S corporation with respect to its stock to which, but for this subsection, Section 301C would apply, shall be treated in the manner provided in subsection B or C, whichever applies. Now, Section 301C generally deals with distributions from a corporation in the ordinary course of business. Such a distributions will generally be considered taxable dividends under Section 316 to the extent of a normal C corporation's earnings and profits, either since inception, presuming inception for this corporation was after February 28, 1913, and for most of my clients that tends to be the case, or it was out of the current year's earnings and profits. If we don't have either of these, or we exhaust one or both of these, by the distribution, then Section 301C provides a distribution will apply against the basis in the stock, Section 301C2, and when basis is exhausted, be treated as gain from the sale or exchange of property, subject again to another pre-1913 appreciation rule. We're not going to generally worry about at this date. Now, those of you who work in the S corporation arena will notice instantly that this seems very similar to the general rule we have for S corporation distributions. If they're not a dividend, then we reduce basis. Once we run out of basis, we have gain. Now, the rules under 1368 break into two parts. 1368B deals with an S corporation that has no accumulative earnings and profits. Now, since the 1982 S Corporation Revision Act, which I remember because it was coming into practice at about that time, so I spent my time in college learning about the S corporations under the old rules where we had previously taxed income and all those other wonderful things. And as soon as I got out in the real world, Congress goes and changes the law. And now I've got a whole new set of S corp rules that are different than what I learned. But one thing that happened in that change was that essentially during an S period, a corporation generally does not create earnings and profits. Earnings and profits are a C corporation attribute. And as such, what we shall call, what I like to refer to as clean S corporations, that is S corporations formed after 1982, which have never been a C corporation, have never merged with a C corporation, never been involved in any sort of transaction where C corporation earnings and profits taint would come into the corporation, are going to always be taxed under 1368B. And the importance there, as we'll discover, is it means AAA becomes irrelevant. Why do I say that? Well, 1368B provides that with an S corporation having no earnings and profits, distributions are first applied against basis for the shareholder, and then secondly, to the extent that it exceeds their basis, it is treated as a gain from the sale or exchange of property. You may notice that pretty much parrots what we found in Section 301 for a regular corporate distribution where we had exhausted earnings and profits. Obviously, this is an S corporation with no earnings and profits, So earnings and profits, I guess, from that viewpoint are exhausted. So you can argue, absent the special pre-1913 rules, that in the S corporation, we have essentially the same treatment as a C corporation once earnings and profits are exhausted, or in this case, we just don't have any. So that's key to get started here. We first recover basis, and then we have a gain from sale or exchange. Now, what some practitioners get confused about is thinking that AAA and basis are tied and they are the same thing. Important thing to note, 1368B, we have no issue with AAA, no discussion of it. As we'll note, AAA does not appear until we get to 1368C. However, an S corporation shareholder still has basis. And 1367 governs basis. 1367 tells us that we have 1367A1 that tells us what increases our basis, and 1367A2 tells us what decreases our basis. Now, generally, our basis is increased by the items of income described in subparagraph A of 1366A1, or said rather quickly, we're going to kind of talk about those items that we pass out that are separately stated items of income. Non-separately stated income, those are the items generally that have no impact on the shareholder, except, you know, has no special impact that has to be computed at the shareholder level, so we don't pass them out separately. And then thirdly, the excess of deduction for depletion over the basis of the property subject to depletion. Now, like in partnerships, we always get special rules with depletion. We're going to skip by that here. We're not going to cover extractive industries and depletion. If you have that, that's a whole other set of discussions that we can deal with at a much later date. But for right now, we're going to ignore that. Just understand that depletions do come in. Depletion comes into this. Now, the second set here tells us what decreases our basis. And decreases of basis are, the first thing is distributions to the stock, which were not includable in the income of the shareholder by reason of 1368. Shorthand, items that were not considered dividends under what we'll get to the special rules here when we distribute earnings and profits. The items in loss of discussion in 1366A1, well, that's pretty much telling us, you know, again, the separately stated items of loss. Remember, the first part was separately stated items of income. Now we have separately stated items of loss. Any non-separately stated computed loss, well, that's all the thing that gets lumped together and passed through as non-separately stated loss. Any expense of the corporation not deductible in computing its taxable income and not properly chargeable to the capital account, and the amount of deduction for depletion, so depletion gets back in this again. As we said, notice the one added thing here versus the top, versus the one we had when we talked about 1367A1, is primarily the non-deductible expenses that add to our income. Now, basis cannot be pushed below zero. If the math would cause that to happen, we're going to end up either with a disallowed loss, or if it's being pushed below zero due to the, would be pushed below zero due to distributions, we're going to get that same old rule that we had in the first under 1368, where having exhausted our basis, the remaining distribution will be a gain on distribution of the, again, on sale of the property, in this case, the stock of the corporation. We're going to have a gain on disposition. We treat it as a gain on quasi-disposition. Obviously, we didn't dispose of it. Now, a special rule to remember when we deal with this is the ordering rules for computing how we order these various additions and subtractions, because obviously, as I noted, in the case of where we go below zero or would go below zero, and remember, basis can never truly go below zero, but if we would go below zero, then what we have to do is determine whether we went below zero, you know, did we have an item that would be a gain or do we have a disallowed loss? And what if we have both distributions and losses in the year in which we go below zero? Well, in that case, Regulation 1.1367-1F provides an ordering rule on how to apply these adjustments. Now, this ordering rule changed in 1998. In fact, for tax years beginning they were prior to August 18, 1998, which essentially was 1999 year, it'd be years before 99, so the 98 calendar year would have begun before August 18, 1998. This was not the order. So if the last time you looked at ordering of S corporation distributions and losses was, let's say, in coursework you did in college before 98, you probably need to revisit that little rule because it's not the same. Now what we do is we have, first thing we can do is add any increase in basis attributable to the income items described in 1367 1A and B and the excess deduction for depletion in 1367A1C. Well, what that says in a roundabout way is that covers every item of increase of basis we discussed above. So we first get credit for all of our increases. Then next, we get any decrease in basis attributable to a distribution by the corporation. So the importance here is we first add all of our positives. Notice that if we have both positives and negatives coming out of the corporation here, we had both increases and decreases in basis under 1367. We add the increases, we don't yet take into account the decreases. After adding the increases, we take our distribution. If that takes us below zero, then we're in the gain or loss situation. However, if after the distributions we still have remaining basis, then we go to apply the decrease in basis attributable to non-deductible expenses. That's the next thing that we take, so the non-deductible expenses come off next. If that takes us below zero, then what that means is the non-deductible expenses simply, essentially in this case, go away. Any non-deductible expenses that go below zero at this point actually just kind of disappear into the ether, never to be seen again. And then finally, we have an item of loss or deduction under 67A, 2, B, and C. That is the other losses that we pick up. Those losses that decrease our basis, those become suspended. Now, we're going to ignore the fact there is an election to swap those two and put the non-deductible losses after the deductible losses. The problem if you make that election, and we're just going to discuss this briefly because this is not a section on that, is if you make that, instead of the non-deductible losses going into the ether, the non-deductible losses now get carried forward and will effectively be used to reduce your basis in the future. That has an impact down the line. That's an election that the shareholder makes. It's important to understand that, discuss that with the client, but that's not today's discussion. Now, what's important to note is that so far, while discussing this, this was with our S corporation that had no earnings and profits, there's been absolutely no discussion of the accumulative adjustments account. Nothing has been mentioned about it to this point. That's not accidental, as you discover, as we move through 1368. Because accumulated adjustment accounts first appears in 1368C. 1368C tells us what to do if we have an S corporation that has earnings and profits. And in the case of a distribution by a corporation with earnings and profits, the first thing we do is take the portion of the distribution that does not exceed the AAA account, accumulative adjustment accounts, is treated under the standard rules we just discussed. So until we get AAA to zero, we keep distributing under those old rules as long as we have AAA. If we don't have AAA, then what we have to do, or we've exhausted AAA, then that part that remains after the application of the first paragraph is treated as a dividend. The part that's not been covered by AAA is going to be treated as a dividend until we exhaust earnings and profits. Once earnings and profits are exhausted, 1368C3 tells us that we continue on and just treat it like any other distribution from this point forward. We're back under the standard default rules because now again we have an S corporation with no earnings and profits. Now, this is 1368B, which ignores a AAA account, governs the distributions generally, even under this rule, except for that band where we're exhausting the E&P. As well, it's important to note that AAA, and emphasize at this point, AAA is not a shareholder item. It doesn't go with the shareholder. It's a corporate item. That's important to note as we'll go through this discussion, because if a new shareholder comes in, that doesn't impact AAA. If a shareholder buys another shareholder stock, that doesn't impact AAA. Redemptions will impact AAA, and we'll talk about that, but just, you know, acquisitions between shareholders or a new person coming in and putting cash into the corporation to buy newly issued shares also doesn't impact AAA, nor does that person dodge the implications of AAA or the implications of the existing earnings and profits, which is really the key. Well, what the heck is AAA? Well, that's defined in 1368E1. And 1368E1A provides that, in general, The accumulative adjustment account means an account of the S corporation which is adjusted for the S period. Notice it covers the S period only. In a manner similar to the adjustment for shareholder basis under 1367. Except it notes no adjustments shall be made for income and related expenses which is exempt from tax under this title. And the phrase not below zero in 1367A2 shall be disregarded and no adjustments shall be made for federal taxes attributable to any tax year in which the corporation was a C corporation. So a couple of key issues there. We follow roughly the basis rules, but we make a couple of key changes to follow them. First thing is, it's obviously done at the corporate level. That's important to remember. This is not done by shareholder. We don't really care what the shareholder's starting basis is. The corporation starts at zero for AAA. Nor do we care if the basis changes, somebody buys, sells. That doesn't impact it either because it's merely the 1367 corporate changes that impact us for AAA purposes. You ignore tax-exempt income and non-deductible expenses in computing AAA. As well, you do not stop reducing AAA after you hit the zero point for the other expenses. The other expenses take AAA below zero. Now, distributions won't take AAA generally below zero if you have E&P sitting there because once we hit zero, distributions swap over and start hitting dividends. So at that point, we get that. Now, at least in theory, once we've done that and we've exhausted AAA, it certainly appears that there is no longer anything blocking us from going below zero. And at that point, since the distribution is no longer taxable to the individual, then yes, we continue to reduce our AAA below zero. But we've hit the point where AAA has become essentially irrelevant unless we later pick up E&P through some transaction. One key factor of ignoring non-taxable income is that AAA has the impact of trapping non-taxable income below E&P in the S corporation. What do I mean by that? If we have $100,000 of ordinary income and $100,000 of tax-exempt interest, and we have E&P of $100,000, let's say we started out the year with $100,000, that represented our earnings from the E&P period. We're going to be very simplistic here. From the C corp period. And we earned 200 grand this year, 100 grand of it representing taxable income, 100 grand of it representing tax exempt interest. The 100 grand representing taxable income, that increases AAA. So does the tax exempt income increase does not increase AAA. Both of them, however, increase basis. So the shareholder's basis goes up by 200 grand. However, we can only distribute to the shareholder 100 grand of our cash before triggering and exhausting AAA. While we have 200 grand in the bank, 100 grand which came from the tax-exempt interest, we can't distribute that 100 grand unless we first distribute. We can't distribute that 100 grand tax-free unless we first distribute the E&P and clear out that 100 grand dividend sitting in between us and the tax-exempt income. Now, there is one special adjustment to AAA that does impact us when something happens at the shareholder level, but that's when there's a transaction between the shareholder and the corporation and we have a redemption. And Section 1368E1B provides if we have a redemption that's treated as an exchange under 302A or 303A. By the way, as an aside here, note that we keep referring back to the 300 sections, the, quote, regular corporate areas, as another aside for S corporation practice. Unless noted otherwise, the standard 300 rules apply to S corporations. S corporations, unless there's an exception we find in the 1300s, were under the standard corporate rules for everything else. Just key thing to keep in mind. Because I've seen people get confused and think, oh, that doesn't apply. That's a C corp issue. 300s are C corp issues and 1300s are S corp issues. No, 1300 presumes 300 except when there's an exception. When 1300 says we're going to treat it differently over here. But if we have a redemption that qualifies under 302 or 303A, the adjustment cumulative adjustment account shall be an amount which bears essentially the ratio of the number of shares redeemed to the number of shares immediately before the redemption. So if we have a redemption of stock that qualifies under 302 or 303, and that redemption Let's say we had 1,000 shares outstanding, we redeemed 250 shares, one quarter of our AAA goes away in that transaction. That eliminates one quarter of the AAA. The standard corporate rule tells us that we also eliminate one quarter of the E&P in that transaction. So basically, those go away pro rata. Now, it's also important to note under 1368 that for AAA purposes, the method of handling current year's items is different. Everything's, you know, we have similar things impacting, but the ordering of how we take items for computing AAA is different. Remember, under basis, we got all the additions. Then we were able to take a distribution. Then all the subtractions took place. That's not how AAA works. 1368EC provides that in general, in applying this section distributions, the amount of the accumulated adjustment account at close of the year shall be determined without regard to any net negative adjustment for such taxable year. And the net negative adjustment means that we group all the reductions, other than for distributions, over the increases. Now remember, for basis purposes, we got the benefit of gross write-up of the basis, gross increase items. And only after those have been applied, then we took our distributions, then we took all the decreases. For AAA purposes, we net the two. So if we have a net increase, a net decrease, we ignore the net decrease, but we don't get credit for those increases. For instance, let's say we had a separately stated increase of $100,000. We have a gain. Let's say we have a non-separately stated loss, though, of $100,000 for the year. Overall, our AAA didn't move. For this purpose, we don't take into account, for purposes, we don't get to add the $100,000. For basis purposes, we would get to add the $100,000, take $100,000 cash out, and then we might have a disallowed loss of $100,000. For AAA purposes, if we started the year with zero AAA, and presumably started the year with zero AAA, zero basis, we would add the $100,000 to AAA. For AAA purposes, we would make any addition. We could not take a distribution without having to consider whether it was a dividend if we had E&P. We'd have to look at E&P to see if we have a dividend, even though for basis purposes, that distribution would have worked just fine. That's a key differential to go first. Finally, the corporation, and again, this is a corporate, although the shareholders consent to this, with the consent of all affected shareholders, can elect to treat distribution as coming first from earnings and profits. In that case, with the consent of all the shareholders, it can basically elect to have all of those things, you know, those things come out first. We can elect E&P. We can elect under 1368. Regulation 1.1368-1F3 even allows us to simply act as if the distribution of earnings and profits was made if nothing else, if there actually was nothing to distribute. You know, we didn't send any cash out. We can elect to go ahead and treat it even if we have no cash to distribute. We can kick out our E&P. Now, kicking out our E&P is going to trigger a dividend. Why would we want to do this? A couple of reasons. First, we might want to do it for a very, let's take a simple reason that may occur to people instantly, even those who aren't terribly aware of S corporations, is that we do have a scheduled increase in the rate on dividends coming forward. If we believe that at some point we're going to kick that money out anyway to the shareholders, and if we believe that regardless of that we're going to pay tax on the dividends, maybe we want that 15% dividend rate. So we may want to kick it out before we get the higher dividend rates coming up down the line, or that one expects to come up when the dividend lower dividend rate goes out of the law. But there's a couple of very practical reasons to do it, even regardless of saying, well, we're never going to really distribute that. We'll never pay that tax. We never have to pay the tax. There are a couple of practical problems. The key problem is found in Section 1375, which provides a tax on excess passive income. And more ominously, the fact that if you trigger that, essentially have that situation occur for three consecutive years, under Section 1362(d)(3), you lose your S election at that third year you had excess passive income. Now, neither of these provisions only apply to S corporations that have accumulative earnings and profits at the end of a tax year. A distribution, you know, why might we run into this? Well, the simple reason we might run into it comes down to, for instance, corporation has been operating for years, but it was a C corp, it became an S corporation, still has earnings and profits. It has a highly appreciated piece of real estate in it. It apparently bought the building in the corporation despite our advice to the client not to do it. The client said, I'm going to do it anyway. The building's in there. They did not sell the building. Quite often that's true of my clients. They sell the business, but they want to keep the real estate because A, you know, the new buyer may not really care about staying there forever, and B, they may decide that they want to hold on. I think the real estate's a better deal, and they can negotiate a rental agreement for that guy as long as he's there, and then down the line sell the real estate off at a nice profit. These days, maybe they presume that profit's a little bit lower than they used to presume it would be, but hey, you know, it's one of those things. So they hold that, and let's presume as well that this rental is not going to, or certainly, you know, the guy is structuring it, so essentially it's a pure net. He's not going to do anything and certainly doesn't want to do anything to attempt to make this into non-passive income for S-Corp rules. Don't forget, passive for S-Corp has nothing to do with Section 469 passive. Always love it when Congress uses the same rules in two totally different ways when dealing with taxation. But we have passive for S is not passive for 469. They are totally different. And in fact, as a practical matter, passive for S, in most cases, ignoring the rental context where it can go either way, usually includes things that are specifically excluded from passive under 469. Just so Congress can confuse us nicely. But we have that situation, so now we're going to have an S corporation that's going to be passive going forward. Well, you know, the catch is, why don't we just liquidate the S corp then? You know, we sold off the business, we obviously paid the gain on the business, we distributed that out. Why don't we just distribute out the building? You know, why don't we just close up the S corp? The only way to do that is to distribute the building to the shareholder. What's our problem? Section 311B provides that a distribution of assets will trigger gain but not loss at a corporate setting. And you'll say, but this is an S corporation, and I say, remember what I told you before. The 300 series apply unless we told it won't, and there's no exclusion for 311B in the S corporation rules. You will trigger a gain on distribution. It won't be double taxed because the shareholder will get a step up in basis and then we'll take it back out at fair value, so in theory it won't have a double taxation. But the problem is we're going to pay that single tax, and the shareholder's probably not happy with that. But if we continue to operate this S corporation and have excess passive income, after 3 years, we'll pay tax for 3 straight years on the excess passive income. And at the end of year 3, we will no longer be an S corp, we'll be a C corp. And now when we try to get that building out of there, we will pay a double tax. And the other problem that we run into at that point is that realistically, even the death of the owner is not going to save us now with a basis step up going through the estate. So we're going to pay one level of the corporate tax regardless if it becomes a C. How can we solve that problem? Take a distribution of the earnings and profits. But all we've got is a building. We don't have enough cash. We can take the deemed distribution to make that happen. Other reason we might need to keep it around, maybe they're perfectly happy and they're going to pay that and they're going to say, yeah, I'm going to sell off the building and do all that. But you know what? The building's subject to the built-in gains tax. And we need to get out, then we need to hold this for at least 5 more years to clear the built-in gains tax on that building so we don't pay the built-in gains tax under 1374. Unlike 1375's tax, which only applied to corporations with earnings and profits, 1374 does not make reference to whether you've gotten rid of the E&P. Rather, 1375 applies for that 10-year period. That's another reason why we might need to make this distribution, keep ourselves valid as an S-corp, finish up the built-in gains periods, and then be able to make the distribution. Now, finally, we can look at the actual IRS ruling from this week. In the ruling, the IRS considered the proper treatment for key person life insurance premiums and proceeds. Specifically, the IRS considered two questions under Revenue Procedure 2008-42. Do premiums paid by an S corporation on an employer-owned life insurance contract of which the S corporation is directly or indirectly a beneficiary reduce the S corporation's accumulative adjustment account? And two, do the benefits received by reason of death of the insured for employer-reported life insurance meet an exception under Section 101J2, which is the exception that says life insurance proceeds aren't going to be taxable to you if they're employer-owned, increase the S corporation's AAA? And the fact pattern the IRS uses is in this. S as a corporation has a valid S election in effect. The corporation purchased a corporate-owned life insurance contract on the life of its employees in order to cover the expenses the company would incur on the death, a key man policy. Employee is a highly compensated employee of the company. The company pays all the premiums. The company is a beneficiary of the policy. At the end of the taxable year, the corporation has subchapter C, accumulative earnings and profits. Now notice, the IRS explains that last point because otherwise it's virtually irrelevant on the AAA issue. Now the IRS doesn't completely explain the logic using and arriving at their decision, but it appears and makes sense that they've applied the rules we've kind of discussed here before. That they decided the proceeds from the policy represents income exempt from taxation, and that similarly the premiums paid represent our expenses related to tax-exempt income, another item that does not impact AAA. As such, the IRS reached the following conclusions. Premiums paid by an S-corporation on an employer-owned life insurance contract of which the S-corporation is directly or indirectly a beneficiary do not reduce the S-corporation's AAA. And benefits received by reason of the death of the insured from an employer-owned life insurance contract that meets the exception under Section 101J2 do not increase the S-corporation's AAA. There is no impact on AAA. Now, in the materials, which again you can find at edzollers.com, in this case, go to ezollers.libsyn.com for the link back to my main site where I'll give you the actual link to the documents that we're going to talk about here that have the write-up here. I have an example case that's spelled out, and I give you two tables of examples, but this is the example we have. We're going to have an S corporation going to own life insurance on its owners. There'll be two owners. They'll each own half the company. Now, in the first year, it had income, net earnings before paying the premiums of $100, paid premiums of $5, and entering into that first year had $100 worth of accumulative earnings and profits. At the end of year one, we end up with $100 in the AAA account, still $100 in the accumulative earnings and profits, and a negative $5 in the other adjustment accounts. That's the account that essentially we use to hold all those things that don't hit AAA. Now, we're going to presume our $100 was cash income, so all this is just cash. So essentially, at the end of the month, let's see, we had $100 coming in. We had another $100 now, so we got $200. We paid $5 for the premium, so we have $195 in the bank. In year two, one shareholder dies before any premium is paid. The second shareholder decides not to renew his policy, so I have no more premiums paid. He decides, hey, there's nobody left to redeem me. Just, it's over. I've got the whole thing. The corporation receives the proceeds of $100 on the policy, and under the agreement, the remaining shareholders agreed to buy out the old shareholder with the proceeds of the policy, or the agreement, I should say, the corporation has agreed to do that. So at the end of this year, and we also say that during that second year, it still earned $100,000 in taxable income. So for that year, we have, again, the cumulative adjustment counts initially, we start out with 100, we pick up the 100 of income. The $100,000 insurance proceeds goes into the other adjustments account. However, the redemption, remember, redemptions come pro rata out of AAA and pro rata for earnings and profits. That $100 redemption gets rid of half the AAA, or $50, and half the E&P, or $50. So at the end of this period, the corporation has $295 in cash. Why? We started with $195. We had $100 worth of regular income, $100 of proceeds, but we paid those proceeds out to redeem the other shareholders, end up with $295. Once that redemption takes place, though, we now actually have income trapped below the earnings and profits. So if the corporation were to distribute the $195 that it's effectively earned since the date that it went S, we could not, that distribution would not be $195 tax free. Rather, it would be $145 tax free and $50 dividends to the original shareholder, or to the shareholder that originally started there, because half the E&P still existed. That means half the dividend remained to be paid. That has an impact, as noted, because of the nature of trapping tax-exempt income below earnings and profits. Now, this has been the tax update for July 7th, 2008. This week, I actually am doing the recording a little different, so you may notice the sound's a little different. I'm actually recording on a very portable EPC, using that temporarily for the recording this week instead of the MacBook. I'll still do the post-production processing on the MacBook. But the EPC I'm using is a travel device. I'm experimenting with it a little bit here to see how well it's going to go for recording if I go with very minimalist, because if you have ever traveled, you know that traveling as light as you can is very helpful, and the EPC may be a nice way to travel very light. It's one of those things when you travel, you begin to notice even a 12-inch laptop begins, 12 and 13-inch laptop begins to become a bit troublesome, especially on an airline seat. So I'm playing with the little EPC. If you haven't looked at the EPC, it's kind of a nice device to work with. Current models run from, basically if you buy them on the market right now, they go from around $300 up to $550. For $550, you can get one loaded actually with Windows XP pre-installed, or you can get one loaded with Linux pre-installed. The Linux pre-installed one has larger drive space. Windows has lower drive space. That's how they pay for it. There's some issues there. The one I'm running currently is running Linux. And as a second laptop, that's not really a problem for what it does on a limited basis. Interesting device. But this week, I am, as always, this is brought to you by Limeburg Information Services, located on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. Be sure to visit them on the web and consider subscribing to their newsletters. This has been the Tax Update for July 7th, 2008.